Okay, so in this set of 12 links, which is describing one set of how a person, you know, takes rebirth and lives, that ignorance at one specific, you know, the ignorance of one specific moment generates a specific formative action, a specific karma. Okay, so let's say, you know, I get angry at somebody and start slandering them. So the ignorance is there at that moment, and then my wish to slander and my act of slandering becomes the karmic formation of one particular set of 12 links. And the reason I keep saying one particular set of 12 links is because the 12 links are describing kind of ones. We have many, many cycles of 12 links that are keep overlapping in all of our many lives. Okay, so we're talking about one act, one moment of ignorance producing one action, which is going to, you know, influence the consciousness and produce a certain rebirth. Okay? So the formative action, or karma, it's the deluded thought or intention which is newly formed by its first branch, ignorance. Okay, so it's talking about that specific action, that specific intention, which was brought about or newly motivated by that specific moment of ignorance that preceded it. Okay, so formative action, you know, it's all it includes the 10 destructive actions, it includes the positive actions that we do under the influence of ignorance. Yeah, it can include, neutral actions I don't think would bring rebirth. So it probably wouldn't include them so much. Okay, so after you have the action, and then once the action ceases, it leaves an impression on the mind stream. Impression, or sometimes it's called impression of karma, or karmic seed, or tendency, or potency. There's lots of different ways to translate it. The Tibetan word is bokchak. Yeah. So it leaves that kind of impression. So the action has ceased, but it hasn't gone away. It's like there's still this trace of the action, and that's the thing that's going to connect to our future experience. Yeah. And see, this is why we often kind of negate the potency of what we do, because we think, okay, what I did this morning is over. You know, it's not going to have any other result besides the immediate result that it had this morning. But we can see that that isn't, you know, very good thinking, because even if you don't believe in karma, if you think a little bit bigger, the result of what we did this morning could influence many, many things, even in this lifetime. Couldn't it? You know? And so it also can leave many seeds on, you know, impressions on the mind stream that can influence what we experience in future lifetimes also. So it's real interesting this way, because we begin to look at what we're doing from a much larger perspective, instead of seeing everything we do as like isolated little blips in our life. It's how everything really interrelates. Yeah. How we're creating our future right now. Now, with karma, there's different kinds of karma. Okay? And we covered this when we talked about the section on karma, so I'm just kind of reviewing. One is fortunate karma. So this is karma that always brings a happy result, a happy rebirth, rebirth in the upper realms. A human being or a god or a demigod. And then there's non-virtuous karma that brings rebirth in lower realms. And remember that things are designated virtuous or non-virtuous according to the result that they bring. In other words, Buddha didn't say this is virtuous and this is non-virtuous, you know, because I said so. It's more like, well, here you have unhappy rebirths, so we'll call the cause of them non-virtuous or unwholesome. Here's happy rebirth, we'll call the cause of that virtue. Okay, so Buddha didn't kind of invent any of this. He just described. And then we have immovable karma. And so immovable karma is the karma that we create when we're born into certain God realms where people have really strong meditation. They're called the Dhyani stages, or the form realm concentrations and the formless realm concentrations. And we've all been born there innumerable times in previous lives, if you can believe it. We've all had samadhi before, yeah, many times. And when you have really strong samadhi, according to the exact level of samadhi, you know, if you don't have the determination to be free and you don't have wisdom, so your mind is still under the influence of disturbing attitudes and karma, then when you die, you're reborn in a God realm exactly corresponding to that level of samadhi that you reached in that life and that karma you created. So it's called immovable in that way. Okay. Whereas other karma is called movable or fluctuating. For example, somebody created the karma to be reborn as a dog, but somehow when they're in the bardo, in the intermediate stage, all the conditions didn't come together and it didn't happen, so that karma later ripened and that person was born as a horse instead of a dog. So it's movable, okay? Instead of being a dog, it can move and be a horse. Or it's also movable in the sense that we can experience it in this life. And this is, you know, when we do purification practice, then they say if you're doing purification and you get sick or you have some kind of problem or something like that, that that's often very heavy negative karma that would have resulted in a really horrible rebirth. And it's manifesting this lifetime as a headache or something like that. So you're purifying it, and it's moved, okay? Instead of, you know, it being this negative karma to be reborn in this incredible, horrible situation for 5 billion eons, you get a stomach ache, or you get the flu, or something like that. And so this is real helpful to remember, because then when, you know, unpleasant things happen in this life, you get fired from your job, or you get sick or whatever, if you remember and you think, you know, this could be because of my dharma practice and my purifying, this could be a really horrible negative karma ripening that would have brought just so much intense suffering for a really long time. It's ripening now in this relatively minor thing compared to what it could be. And so this helps us not to just really jump in and feel completely sorry for ourselves, but it helps us give some meaning to whatever difficulty we're experiencing at that particular time. Yeah. This is really important to remember. I mean, this kind of way of thinking is so useful if you apply it in the situations. Yeah, it's so useful. Like, I sent Terry this one thing. I sent it to him, actually, over a year ago, about a year and a half ago. Terry's one member of our group who recently died. And he died from AIDS, so he knew he was dying a long time. And it was one text Lama Zopa was teaching about this and talking about this thing that when you're sick, to try and see your sickness as a result of negative actions we've done in the past, which would have resulted in just humongous sufferings, but we're really fortunate that it ripens in this lifetime as this sickness, and as awful as AIDS or cancer or whatever is, it's much better than 5 billion eons in the lower realm. No? And if you can kind of put your disease into that perspective, then it gives a sense and a meaning to your disease. So instead of just freaking out and, how does this happen to me? And you understand. Yeah, the mind has some kind of peace. Just to diverge a little bit, I've been going to this pastoral counseling workshop, and I'm the only Buddhist in there. It's all Christians. One of the leaders is Jewish, but that's about it. And what's come up a lot, we've had 3 days of it, is people when they're sick being angry at God. And this is real interesting for me to listen to them discuss, because it points out so clearly to me why I'm a Buddhist. Yeah? It's just so clear to me. Because it seems like many people, you know, they feel like, well, I've been a good person and I go to church and now I have cancer. You know, why did God do this to me? Why does this happen to me? And that, you know, and so the people get really angry at God and they lose faith, and it just creates incredible turmoil and suffering in their mind. So that on top of the physical disease, you now have the spiritual malaise of being angry at God and then feeling guilty because you're angry at God, you know? And it's really painful for people. And Buddhism totally avoids that whole thing, you know, because in a Buddhist sense, I mean, I was thinking about it while they were having this discussion that, you know, when awful things happen, we say, it's a result of my own past actions. Yeah, doesn't mean I'm a bad, horrible person, doesn't mean I deserve to suffer, but it is a result of my actions, so I take responsibility for that. But if I've been a Dharma practitioner and I've been trying to purify and trying to create good karma, then this could very well be actually a fortunate circumstance, in the sense that instead of this karma ripening and horrible, you know, incredibly lengthy suffering, it's ripening now as this disease, and I'm purifying it and getting rid of it. And then your mind can kind of be peaceful with that, yeah? And so then you only have the physical pain to deal with instead of all the mental and spiritual pain that usually is what I think makes illness so awful. Yeah, it's like when a karma ripens, it could be a purifying karma, or it could be just a karma ripening. We don't know.
Right.
But the thing is, whatever it is, if we see it as a karma that would have been, with the thought training, would have been a big, negative, horrible thing,
okay,
ripening as this, then we stop our own present suffering. And we purify our own anger and discouragement and different wrong views and things like that. And we protect the mind from creating more negative karma in reaction to this suffering.
So the purification happens just by...
I think the purification, my guess, this is my interpretation, you might check with somebody who knows more, in fact I advise you to. The purification, I think, could come partly from your practice, which is making a negative karma ripen in a real big negative karma, ripen in that small thing, and part of the purification comes by your way of viewing it. Okay, this is my understanding. Like I said, I could be wrong, but that's what makes sense to me.
Technically, just
the karma. Right. Because you can see that if you didn't transform it, you'd probably like start getting really angry and really discouraged, you know? And like all that habitual karma, to be angry and to speak bad to other people and to grumble and all that, that would kind of start influencing our behavior, and then our disturbing attitudes would jump in, and then we'd, you know, completely go bananas. But if you'd use the thought transformation, then that whole way of thinking and all that other stuff doesn't come up.
Okay, and then it's sort of the same point. You didn't talk about plant, but then what you say again, how you can view those kind of circumstances like, may this suffering suffice for
yes,
suffering.
Right. And this is where the taking and giving practice. Mm-hmm. So, you know, first you see it as a result of your own karma and accept it. And then what purifies it even more and what creates a lot of positive potential is then if you say, may this suffice for the suffering of all others, and you do that meditation where you imagine taking on the suffering of others and using it to destroy the ignorance and self-cherishing, and then giving others our body and possessions and positive potential. Yeah, so if you add that meditation on top, then I think you really purify a whole lot and you create incredible amount of good karma. So then your being sick is like the best way, it becomes the best way to create good karma. Not because being sick is good, who wants to be sick, but because of the way your mind is. Yeah. And that's why thought training is so important, because we can't control when we're going to get sick and when we're not. And it's going to happen sometime or another. But if we can practice this, then that really becomes an incredible protection for our mind and a way of transforming what would otherwise be an obstacle into our practice of the path. I think it takes some kind of feeling of trying to purify yourself for the karma to be purified. In other words, if it's a Christian who, let's say, has done a lot of confession and repentance and
accept the illness within their own
time. Yeah.
But not really understand.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, like, it's brought on by their own wish to purify. In other words, every time we experience unpleasant things, it isn't necessarily purification. It's only purification if we wanted to purify. So a Christian who has wanted to purify, I think then it would become purification. Yeah, some understanding on your own part. Well, to have that karma ripen, to have what's causing the illness be, instead of just a karma that causes an illness, a karma that would have caused, you know, eons in a horrible lifetime in the future. Okay, in other words, every illness we experience may not be the result of, you know, may not be a karma which would have manifested as a long suffering in horrible rebirths. It could just be the karma to get sick. That's it. But what makes that karma, which would have resulted in a long-term suffering in the future, become a relatively short-term thing in this life is your purification practice, your wish to purify. Is that making some sense? So I think, yeah, Christians could have that happen, but it's because of their wish to purify. And I've said, I read this one, I think I told you about this before, this one student interviewed several Buddhist nuns and several Christian nuns, and wrote it up and sent me a copy of it. And it was really lovely because some of the Christian nuns were saying very similar things, you know, that when unfortunate things happen, instead of freaking out about it, you put it in the context of your religious practice. Yeah, so I think like the really spiritual Christians or Muslims or Jews or Hindus or whoever you are, they would have a way to transform it. Yeah, but you have to, you know, yeah, but I think most people have difficulty with that. Yeah?
When you say the words, is there hung up on how to pull the string?
Exactly. That's very well put. Very well. I'm going to repeat that into the microphone for Cindy who couldn't hear it. Okay. The guy would say that Westerners are really hung up on the mechanistic view of karma, and instead of really checking the meaning of it and the motivation and checking their own minds, they want to know how to manipulate and get around it and pull the strings, you know. So kind of Westerners kind of tend to look at it as the legal system and how can I, you know. And so I think, well, and actually sometimes when you get into the real detailed studies, I mean, it was real interesting when Gyanlen Rinpoche was teaching about that. He was going into all the details about karma, kind of like what I did when we taught about karma. Many of the people there, they said, why did he tell us all that? It just sounds like a legal system. And I think it's we didn't get the point that Gyanlen was saying that as all as a reflection so that we can look at what's how we act and how we think. And what's the difference between, you know, a really heavy negative karma and a very light negative karma. And how do we discern the difference in our own mind so that we can, you know, abandon both of them, but at least the heavy one if we can't abandon the lighter one. You know, so it's all taught in the spirit of practice and looking at our own mind and not seeing it as a legal system to finagle.
But I didn't get the
Yeah. Also, what this kind of movable karma is, and this is like why this practice of POA is very good. POA is the transference of consciousness, and so some people practice it themselves, ejecting their consciousness to a pure realm, but sometimes you can have a very good practitioner do the transference of consciousness for somebody else who's died. And so somebody may have the karma ripening to be reborn in a certain realm, but due to this person practicing the POA, a transference of consciousness, and due to other karma that this person has, their consciousness can be transferred instead to a pure realm. Pure realm is where, you know, the whole atmosphere is revolving around Dharma practice. Okay, where all the conditions are just really good for you to pursue your spiritual practice. You don't, you know, have lots of other things to do. You don't have lots of noise. You don't have car insurance to worry about, you know. You don't have all this other stuff that distracts you. And everything in the environment, even the wind blowing through the teaching, through the trees, becomes a Dharma teaching. So it becomes very easy to practice. Okay, so there's various pure realms. Amitabha's pure realm is one of them. And so you'll find in the Chinese Buddhist tradition especially, they do a lot of pure realm practice praying to be reborn in Amitabha's pure realm. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Are these the same things
as
difficult you die
when you have a hard time? Oh, no. Pure realm is not horrifying.
It's really good.
It's really good.
Well,
no. Oh, you mean, okay, you mean right as you're dying that you have this horrible experience? Okay, when you're born in the desire realm gods, yeah, you have this super fantastic life, but 7 days before you die, you know, you start to decay and it's like, right, exactly.
But this is different from the pyramid.
Yeah. Because the God realms, they're still, you get born in them because of good karma, okay, but they're still within cyclic existence. So you're born there, the karma runs out, you get born somewhere else. Okay, that's why we're always going up and down in one rebirth to the next. Because create karma for so long, it runs out, get reborn somewhere else. Whereas the pure realm, once you take rebirth in a pure realm, you don't get reborn in any of the other places. And because everything around you is so good for practice, you can, you know, become a Buddha. What we're doing then is the very high masters, they could just go to a pure land and stay there. But what we're saying is we need you here. And so by making those kind of prayers, we're creating the karma to be able to have them come here and manifest so that they can teach us. Because Buddhas manifest in relationship to our karma. Okay? Yeah, Buddhas manifest in relationship to our karma.
Well, what I'm saying is, well, what about their karma?
They are more and more and more free of karma.
Right.
So, when you're a Buddha, you aren't influenced by your own karma.
Okay,
Bodhisattvas might be influenced by their own karma. The Buddhas aren't influenced, you know, by karma to be reborn in this kind of place. But we need them, okay? And so their manifesting depends on our karma. You know, that's why we say having a precious human life like we do is so fortunate, because the Buddha has manifested and taught, and the lineage exists, and we still have teachings and teachers and everything all around us. And this isn't an accident. It isn't like it's always this way and it's so easy to get and there's always a Buddha around. But rather the Buddha appeared and all this exists because we created the karma for it all. Yeah? So if sentient beings don't have the karma, then the Buddha doesn't manifest. Or the Buddha manifests according to their level of mind. So you remember that story about Maitreya Buddha, who, was meditating and Asanga. He was meditating to get a view of Maitreya, and he couldn't see him. And when he finally did, Yeah, there was this dog infested with worms, and he had so much compassion, and he went to take the worms out with his mouth, with his tongue, so he wouldn't kill the worms and put them in a piece of his own flesh that he cut off. And by that purified so much of his negative karma that he could recognize then that it wasn't an old worm-infested dog, it was actually Maitreya Buddha. But then, when he got all excited and he wanted to share Maitreya with everybody else, and he put him on his back, he was seeing Maitreya. Everybody else in the village didn't see anything except one old lady who had a little bit of good karma and saw the dog. Yeah, so at least could see Maitreya, contact the dog. But it's like all this happens in relationship to our karma. Yeah?
What's the moral of the story?
Moral of the story is create good karma and abandon negative karma. Yeah? And things are not inherently existent. Yeah. Okay. So, this karma, formative action of karma, makes transmigrating beings deluded because it plants polluted imprints on their consciousness. Okay? So, on our consciousness, when we act out of ignorance, we create karma. The karma is polluted or diluted or contaminated because it's motivated by ignorance. And then that gets planted on our consciousness, so then we have all these karmic seeds that then will lead to rebirth in some realm or another in cyclic existence.